Welcome to the Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment System Fiscal Year 2012 Policy Changes relating to the Minimum Data Set Version 3.0 National Provider Call. All lines will remain in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. Today's conference is being recorded and transcribed. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you for participating in today's call. I will now turn the conference over to Leah Nguyen. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Melissa. Hello, I am Leah Nguyen from the Provider Communications Group here at CMS. I would like to welcome you to the Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment System Fiscal Year 2012 Policy Changes relating to the Minimum Data Set 3.0 National Provider Call. Subject matter experts will discuss new MDS 3.0 policies that will be implemented on October 1st, 2011. A question and answer session will follow the presentation. At the end of the presentation, we will open up the phone line to give you an opportunity to ask questions of our subject matter experts. Before we get started, there are a few items that I need to cover. There is a slide presentation for this call. If you have not already done so, this presentation may be downloaded now from the SNF PPS website located at www.cms.gov/snfpps. At the left side of the webpage, click on Fiscal Year 2012 Rug 4 Training and Education and scroll down the page to the download section. Also, this call is being recorded and transcribed. We have a lot to cover today, so without further delay, we will get started. At this time, I would like to introduce Sheila Lamowitz, Director of the Division of Institutional Post-Acute Care. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Lamowitz.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate your participating in this call. I think we're going to have a busy afternoon. We've gotten a lot of questions from you in advance. We're going to try to answer as many as we can during the session. Those that we can't, we will be posting on our website and continuing to distribute information so that this is only the first of the training sessions that will be available. I want to turn this over now, without too much of my talking, to the people who developed and will be presenting the material. Jeanette Kranitz is our Deputy Director for the Division of Institutional Post-Acute Care. Penny Gershman is our Clinical Specialist. John Kane is our SNF Analyst. And between them, they're going to go through all of the materials and hopefully answer some of your questions. Jeanette?
Thank you, Sheila. I did want to thank everybody for coming today and participating in our first training opportunity. Because of the overwhelming demand of this call, we have arranged additional outlets for training. One that I wanted to make you aware of is that the regularly scheduled SNF long-term care open door forum on September the 1st has been changed to be a special open door forum to provide a training opportunity. During that call, we have extended it 1 hour, so the call will now be from 2 to 4 p.m., and we will extend the encore availability of that call to allow additional time to hear the training material. That training session will pretty much reflect the exact same material that we're going to present to you today. It will be the same slides. So if you participate in today's call, that will be a repeat for you. In addition to that call, as Sheila mentioned, we're putting additional information on the SNF PPS website. And that will, right now, that consists of the slides available for this training opportunity. And we will be developing what we're going to call a clarifications memo. We've received a lot of questions and comments, and we've tried to incorporate some of the broader concepts into these training slides. However, there may be some additional questions or some more detailed answers that you want, and those will be included in a clarifications document that we'll post after we get additional questions today. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to our two presenters, and our first presenter will be Penny Gershman.
Thanks, Jeanette. I will now go through the agenda for today's call. You can follow along with the slides, and I'm going to start on slide 2.
Today we will be talking about the new MDS assessment schedule, the allocation of group therapy minutes, the revised student supervision provisions, the end of therapy OMRA and the new resumption items, and the new unscheduled PTS assessment, the change of therapy OMRA, or the COT OMRA. Moving on to slide 3. In the past, the MDS assessment schedule allowed for significant duplication of information gathered during overlapping look-back periods. We decided to change the MDS assessment schedule in order to more appropriately capture the changes in patient statuses. Therefore, we have modified the current MDS assessment schedule. As outlined on slide 3, beginning in fiscal year 2012, facilities must use the updated MDS assessment schedule for setting the assessment reference date for scheduled PPS assessments. The new schedule will be effective for all assessments where the ARD falls on or after October 1st, 2011. Moving on to slide 4, as you can see, with the exception of the 5-day assessment, all ARD windows and grace days have been modified. We recognize that some duplication of information still exists, but the new schedule will alleviate a fair amount of this. I'm going to skip to slide 6 now. For assessments of an ARD set for on or after October 1st, 2011, the ARD must be in compliance with a revised MDS assessment schedule. Otherwise, early or late assessment penalties may apply. For example, if the ARD for a 14-day assessment is set for October 1st, 2011, and this date is equivalent to day 19 of the resident's stay, then the late assessment penalty will apply, and the facility must bill the default rug for days 15 through 18. Another example, if the ARD for the 14-day assessment is set for October 1st, 2011, and this date is equivalent to day 12 of the resident's stay, which would be one day early, then the early assessment penalty will apply, and the facility must bill the default rug for the first day of the next payment period, which is day 15. In general, moving back to slide 5, when October 1st, 2011 is day 19, 34, 64, or 94 of the Medicare Part A SNF stay, assessment should be completed by September 30th, or the assessments will be considered late and the payment penalties will apply. And now I'd like to offer some guidance on combining scheduled and unscheduled assessments. We're moving to slide 7. This policy is outlined in the Medicare Claims Processing Manual and is found in Chapter 2 and 6 of the updated RAI Manual, which will be available in September. If the ARD for an unscheduled PPS assessment falls within the ARD window, including grace days, of a scheduled PPS assessment, and the scheduled assessment has not yet been completed, then the assessments must be combined. For example, if the ARD for a COT OMRA is day 14 of a resident stay, and the 14-day scheduled PPS assessment has not yet been completed, then the assessments must be combined, and facilities should use the appropriate AI code to indicate the combined assessment. Moving on to slide 8. So when combining the assessments, the item set for the scheduled assessment should be used. When combining scheduled and unscheduled assessments, the ARD for the combined assessment is what would have been the ARD used for the unscheduled assessment. Moving on, we will now talk about group therapy allocation. Included in this discussion will be the modified definition of group therapy, the allocation of group therapy minutes, and clarification of documentation requirements. Later on in the training, we will discuss how to bill for group therapy with student supervision. Moving to slide 10. In order to code minutes as group therapy for a patient who is covered under Medicare Part A, group therapy will be defined as therapy provided simultaneously to four patients, regardless of payer source, who are performing the same or similar activities. Facilities must plan group therapy sessions to include no more or less than four participants. We chose four because larger groups than four make it difficult to manage all of the patients effectively, and smaller groups limit the ability of patients to interact and learn collectively. I'm on slide 11 now. We have received this upcoming question both in rule comments and after the final rule publication.
Many providers have asked what happens if one of the participants gets sick or refuses to show up to a group therapy session. Our response is that as long as a facility had originally planned the session for 4 participants, then the group session can still be counted for the other group members. However, the minutes in this case will still be divided by 4 for each remaining participant. This new policy will be implemented as follows, and I'm on slide 12 now. Effective for assessments with an ARD set on or after October 1st, 2011, all group time reported on the MDS will be divided by 4 when determining each resident's appropriate RUG classification. In other words, unallocated group time reported on the MDS is divided by 4 by the RUG 4 grouper and used in RUG classification. Here's an example of group therapy allocation, and I'm on slide 13 now. 4 residents in SNF X participate in a group session for a total of 60 minutes. The facility will record 60 minutes of group therapy for each resident on each MDS. The unallocated group time is divided by 4 by the RUG 4 grouper. Allocated group minutes, group therapy minutes, which is 15 minutes each, are then used to determine each patient's RUG classification. Another commonly asked question which we've received is, does the group therapy cap, which is that the resident's group minutes cannot constitute more than 25% of his or her total therapy time, still apply? And the answer is that the cap will still apply and will apply to the patient's reimbursable therapy minutes after allocation. Moving on to slide 15, in our final rule, we reiterated our documentation expectations, specifically when talking about modes of therapy used. This must ensure that patient care follows a prescribed and documented plan of care. And you can find the relevant regulatory guidance which talks about documentation in the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 409.23 and Section 409.17. Moving on to slide 16, this means that documentation in a patient's medical record should be sufficient to justify a plan of care and to identify potential changes in patient's medical condition. Skilled services, and particularly therapy services, should be properly tailored to the individualized goals of the patient. Specifically for group therapy and other modes of therapy, it is expected that the medical record and the plan of care should include descriptions of prescribed therapy modes, for example, individual, concurrent, or group, disciplines used, OT, PT, or speech, the rationale for particular therapy regimen, and who is providing the therapy, whether that would be a therapist, a therapy assistant, or a student. Remember, patients are individuals, and as such, it is vital to keep adequate records. Facilities may wish to consider time stamping as well at the start and end of therapy session in order to more appropriately document and show the time that is being spent in therapy. Another policy change that we have made will affect therapy student supervision, and I'm on slide 18 now. Effective October 1st, 2011, students are no longer required to be under the line of sight supervision of a therapist or therapy assistant. However, the SNF supervising therapists and assistants are expected to exercise their own judgment regarding the level of supervision a particular student may require. I'm on slide 19 now. The therapy associations, APTA, AOTA, and ASHA, have provided recommendations on student supervision guidelines, and their guidance is available on the SNF PTS website at www.cms.gov/SNFPTS/spotlight. One commonly asked question that we have gotten is how to bill when supervising a student. We want to remind everybody that for billing purposes, the student is considered an extension of the therapist. Specifically, in order to code for individual therapy, when a therapist or student is treating one resident while the other is not treating or supervising any other resident or therapist, then you may code as individual therapy. I'm on slide 22 now.
In order to code as concurrent therapy in the MDS, there's three ways to do so when a student is involved. You may code as concurrent therapy when the therapist and student are treating one resident each who are performing different activities while not treating or supervising any other residents or therapists. Or code as concurrent therapy if the therapist, his or herself, is treating two residents doing different activities while the student is not treating any residents. Or if the student is treating two residents who are doing different activities while the therapist is not treating any residents. Moving on to slide 24. In order to code as group therapy, the time for the group therapy session may only be counted if the full group of four participants is being run by either the supervising therapist or assistant or the student, while the other may not be supervising any other therapist or treating any other resident. A supervising therapist may treat four residents doing the same activity while the student does not treat any residents. Then the group minutes may be counted. Consequently, the student may treat four residents while the supervisor is not treating any other residents or supervising any other students, and this time may be coded as group therapy. We'll return. We're pausing for 1 second. We have some technical difficulties. Thank you for your patience. We're back. Just to remind you, we're on slide 25 now. And the question has been asked, can a supervising therapist be supervising other patients or students while his or her student is conducting the group session? And as said before, no. Consistent with current policy, the supervising therapist may not be supervising any other patients or students at that time. I'm on slide 26 now. The question is, can the supervising therapist bill for a group therapy session in cases where the supervising therapist is treating two patients while the therapy student simultaneously treats two patients, all of whom are doing the same activity? And the answer to this is no. A group therapy session must be one single planned session involving four participants working together on the same or similar activities. And now you can all enjoy a little pop quiz. I will read the questions and then pause for a second or two for you to think about the response. This is a question on student supervision. True or false, starting October 1st, 2011, all students should provide therapy outside line of sight supervision, regardless of training or qualification? And the answer is false. While line of sight supervision is no longer required, providers must still exercise discretion over which students are prepared to operate independently. The next question, we're on slide 29 now. This question is about group therapy allocation. Ms. X plans a group therapy session for four residents. 10 minutes into the session, one of the residents becomes ill and must return to his room. In order for the group session to count for the other three patients, the facility should A, move the session to the sick patient's room, C, return the patients to their room, because with three people, the session will not count no matter what the facility does, C, since the session was originally planned for four participants, the facility can continue with the session and the minutes will count for the remaining participants, or D, force the sick resident to participate. And the answer to this question is C.
Since the session was originally planned for 4 participants, the facility can continue with the session, and the minutes will count for the remaining participants. And once again, please note that therapy time will still be divided by 4. Moving on to slide 31, the third question in the pop quiz, true or false? On or after October 1st, 2011, SNFs will be given the opportunity to choose whether to use the old or new MDS assessment schedule. And the answer is false. Effective for assessments where the assessment reference date is set on or after October 1st, 2011, all SNFs must follow the revised MDS assessment schedule. Question 4, involving student supervision. What type of therapy should be billed for each patient in the following situation? If a therapy student treats Mr. B while the supervising therapist treats Ms. M doing different activities, what mode of therapy should be coded? And the answer in this situation is concurrent therapy. The next one, supervising therapist treats Mr. E while the student does not treat any patients. This should be coded as individual therapy. And the final question, the supervising therapist treats Ms. P while Mr. T and Mr. T, while a therapy student treats Ms. L and Mr. H, all of whom are doing the same activity. And in this case, none of this therapy should be coded if this is inconsistent with all therapy definitions. We finished the first part of the call, and I'll now pass it back to Sheila Lambwit.
Thank you very much. I just want to let you know that we are going to continue this call. We've had an interesting and unexplained event that appears to be an earthquake in the area surrounding the building. Now, I know the SNF rule was really controversial, but I don't think it really got to this level of retribution. However, we might need to leave. So far, nobody has asked us to evacuate the building. It's very possible that it's something of a much lower level. We've been having water main problems in the area of the building. So I just want to let you know we're going to continue for now, but if you suddenly hear, okay, we're done, it's because we need to leave the building. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to John Kane, and he'll get the non-stressful role of continuing.
Thank you, Sheila. And again, thank you very much, everyone, for participating on today's call. I will be taking you through the rest of today's presentation, beginning with the end of therapy, or EOT OMRA. On slide 35, we will cover 3 topics in our discussion of the EOT OMRA, specifically a clarification of the 3-day policy related to setting the ARD for an EOT OMRA, a clarification of when it is appropriate to issue an advanced beneficiary notice, or ABN, to a SNF resident, and we'll discuss the new Section O items on the EOT OMRA, which permit a facility to resume a therapy program after therapy has been discontinued. First, let's discuss the 3-day policy. As outlined on slide 36, the 3-day policy is related to how facilities can determine if an EOT OMRA is necessary and how the ARD for the EOT OMRA must be set. As discussed on page 26389 of the FY12 SNF PPS proposed rule, an EOT OMRA must be completed in all cases when a beneficiary classified into a RUG-4 rehab plus extensive or rehab group did not receive any therapy services for 3 or more consecutive calendar days. We refer to this period when the patient did not receive any therapy services as a discontinuation of therapy services. Such discontinuations may be planned, that is, that the facility had anticipated and expected that the beneficiary would not receive therapy services during that period, or unplanned, that is, that the facility did not expect a discontinuation. It is important to note that no matter if discontinuation of therapy services was planned or unplanned, an EOT OMRA must be completed if the discontinuation persists for 3 or more consecutive calendar days. We would also note that the discontinuation applies to any calendar day of a patient's stay for all facilities, whether it is a weekday, weekend, or holiday. In order to set the ARD for an EOT OMRA, facilities should set the ARD for day 1, 2, or 3 from the date of the patient's last therapy session. In other words, if a patient's last therapy session occurred on Wednesday, then the ARD for the EOT OMRA may be set on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday of that week. Moving to slide 37, we'll now discuss issuing an ABN to SNF residents. We received a number of questions regarding how this three-day policy relates to issuing the resident an advance beneficiary notice or ABN. Specifically, this question arises for residents who are not receiving any skilled services beyond therapy services and would therefore be at risk of having the Medicare Part A coverage of their SNF stay dropped if the therapy services are discontinued. On slide 37, we pose the question as, if the only skilled service a patient is receiving is therapy-related, and the patient does not receive any therapy for three consecutive calendar days, is the facility always required to issue the patient an ABN? As you will note on slide 38, the answer is no. An EOT OMRA, even in these circumstances, does not necessarily mean that a patient will lose Part A coverage of their SNF stay. Instead, the SNF ABN is intended to give the beneficiary a reasonable amount of time to make a decision regarding their care based on the provider's belief that Medicare will not cover the stay. A case where an ABN would likely not be necessary is in the case the resident's therapy is discontinued but resumes 4 days later. In such a case, the patient would not necessarily be dropped from Part A coverage, and the provider would not necessarily need to issue the resident an ABN. We have also received similar questions about issuing a Notice of Medicare Non-Coverage, or NOMNC, which is noted on slide 39, is not issued when care ends based on beneficiary initiative or provider business reasons. We hope these two clarifications address many of the questions we've been receiving on these issues. The final topic related to the EOT OMRA is the new items that have been added to the EOT OMRA, specifically items 00450A and 00450B, which allow providers to resume a therapy program that has been discontinued for no more than 5 consecutive calendar days. As noted on slide 40, we would like to highlight and stress that the EOTR is not a new PPS assessment. The EOTR refers to a subset of items that may be completed on the EOT OMRA to indicate that the discontinued therapy plan will be resumed and that payment at the previous therapy rug may resume when the therapy resumes. As previously stated, the resumption of therapy can occur no more than 5 days after the last day of therapy provided. For example, if a resident receives his last therapy intervention on Monday, then the last day that resident is eligible to resume therapy at the previous level is Saturday. This policy is discussed in greater detail in the MDS RAI manual and beginning on page 26390 of the FY 2012 proposed rule. Basically, an EOTR may be used in cases when the resident will resume therapy at the same therapy level as prior to the discontinuation of therapy. If the provider is unsure if this is possible, or is sure that the resident will be unable to resume his previous therapy regimen, then the provider must complete an EOT OMRA and then may choose to complete a new therapy evaluation and unscheduled assessment, such as an SOT OMRA, or wait until the next scheduled PPS assessment to classify the patient back into a therapy rug. Also, as noted on slide 40, this policy will be effective for all EOT OMRA assessments with an ARD on or after October 1, 2011. In other words, if the ARD for the EOT OMRA is not set for on or after October 1, 2011, then the provider may not choose to complete the EOTR items and resume therapy. In terms of actually completing the EOTR items on an EOT OMRA, it will depend on whether or not the EOT OMRA without the resumption items filled in has been accepted into the KEYS ASAP system. Slide 41 discusses what to do in cases when the EOT OMRA has not yet been accepted into the KEYS ASAP system. In such cases, the provider can simply go ahead and code the EOTR items and submit the assessment. Slide 42 discusses what to do if the EOT OMRA, without the EOTR items completed, has already been accepted into the KEYS ASAP system. In this case, the provider would submit a modification request for the EOT OMRA and change only the EOTR items in Section O and modify item X0900E to indicate that the reason for modification is the addition of the resumption of therapy date. That is all that I have to discuss on policy changes related to the EOT OMRA, though there will be a question and answer period to follow the formal presentation in case there are any additional questions or concerns. We will now discuss a new PPS assessment that is being implemented in FY 2012, the change of therapy, or COT-OMRA. We will discuss a variety of topics related to the COT-OMRA. Those listed on slide 43. We will discuss a variety of topics related to COT-OMRA, such as when a COT-OMRA must be completed, how the COT-OMRA will affect provider billing, and some clarifications of the COT-OMRA policy based on questions we received prior to this call. The purpose of the COT-OMRA is to capture changes in the provision of therapy services to SNF residents outside the standard observation periods associated with scheduled PPSSF. In other words, the COT-OMRA is designed to highlight when the therapy provided to a resident in a given week is not reflective of the therapy the patient should be receiving given the RUG-4 therapy level into which the patient is currently classified. As a formal definition, a COT-OMRA must be completed for a resident receiving any amount of skilled therapy services if the therapy received by the resident during the COT observation period does not reflect the RUG-4 classification level on the patient's most recent PPS assessment used for payment. Now, there are clearly some terms and jargon in that definition that should be explained further, which I will go over now. The COT observation period refers to a successive 7-day window beginning the day following the ARD of the resident's last PPS assessment used for payment. For example, if a provider were to set the ARD for a resident's 14-day assessment on day 14, then the COT observation period would begin on day 15 and end on day 21, assuming no intervening assessment. If there were an intervening assessment, whether it be a scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment, then the COT observation period would be reset based on the ARD of the intervening assessment. We say successive windows because the possibility of a COT-OMRA must be considered every 7 days for patients receiving any amount of skilled therapy services. If during a given week the patient receives any amount of skilled therapy appropriate to their determined therapy level, then the provider need not complete a COT-OMRA at that time and will instead begin considering therapy provided in the following or succeeding week. As noted by the asterisk on slide 44, I should point out that the COT observation period begins on the day following the ARD of the last PPS assessment used for payment, except in cases where the previous assessment is an EOT OMRA with the resumption items completed. In such cases, the COT observation period begins on the resumption date listed in item 0450B on the EOT OMRA. Finally, I would point out that the COT OMRA policy becomes effective for assessments with an ARD on or after October 1, 2011. For example, if the ARD for a resident's 30-day assessment is set for October 1, 2011, then the COT observation period begins October 2, 2011 and would end on October 8, 2011, assuming no intervening assessment. Moving to slide 45. The definition also refers to therapy not being reflective of the patient's RUG-4 classification. But what exactly does this mean? In other words, how should a facility determine if a COT-OMRA must be completed? As we discussed on slide 45, providers should perform an informal change of therapy evaluation to consider whether or not the intensity of the therapy services provided to the resident during the COT observation period changed significantly. We say this is an informal evaluation because there is no paperwork required for this evaluation. Providers are free to decide for themselves what process they feel is most appropriate to determine the need for a COT-OMRA. However, in considering changes to the intensity of therapy, providers must consider changes to all therapy category qualifying conditions, such as total reimbursable therapy minutes, or RTM, number of days therapy was provided, or the number of therapy disciplines. Just to clarify, the term reimbursable therapy minutes, or RTM, refers to the minutes used to determine the resident's RUG-4 classification. Effectively, a patient's RTM are his or her individual therapy minutes plus allocated concurrent or allocated group therapy minutes. So providers must determine if changes in the intensity of therapy, as just described, would cause the resident to be classified into a different RUG-4 category. However, what do we mean by RUG-4 categories? The categories we are referring to are listed on slide 46. As noted earlier, a COT-OMRA is necessary if the therapy received during the COT observation period would be sufficient for a patient to be classified into a different RUG-4 category. Therefore, if the patient's RUG-4 category would not change, then a COT-OMRA would not need to be completed. For example, if a resident is classified into rehabilitation very high, and his RTM were to increase from 510 minutes on the previous assessment to 600 minutes during the COT observation period, assuming all else is equal, then a CRT OMRA would not be required, as the resident's RTM is still reflective of the RTM necessary for classification and rehabilitation very high. In terms of billing and payment, as noted on slide 47, the CRT OMRA establishes a new RUG and new payment retroactively back to the beginning of the COT observation period for which the COT OMRA was completed, and continues until the next scheduled or unscheduled CPS assessment.
May I have your attention, please?
Go on.
There has been a report of a 5.8...
Much as we have just confirmed that there was a 5.8 earthquake south of D.C. However, they assure us that the building is still standing and that we should continue. So, John, you're on.
Thank you, Sheila. Sorry, it took me a second to catch my breath. So, in terms of billing and payment, I'm going to repeat a little bit. In terms of billing and payment, as noted on slide 47, the COT OMRA establishes a new RUG and new payment retroactively back to the beginning of the COT observation period for which the COT OMRA was completed and continues until the next scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment. For example, if a resident's last assessment had an ARD of day 32, the COT observation period would begin day 33. If at the end of the COT observation period, which in this case would be day 39, the provider were to determine that a COT OMRA was necessary, then a COT OMRA would be completed and the new RUG payment resulting from the COT OMRA would be billed from day 33 and forward until the next scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment. Moving to slide 48, providers should consider the following questions when determining if a COT OMRA may be necessary. First, providers should consider whether or not the resident is receiving any skilled therapy services. If the answer is no, then no COT OMRA would be required. If the answer is yes, then providers should consider whether or not the therapy provided to that resident during the COT observation period was consistent with the patient's current RUG full classification. For example, if the patient was classified into category rehabilitation high, did the resident receive between 325 and 499 reimbursable therapy minutes during that week, and was at least one rehabilitation discipline provided for 5 days during that week? If the answer is yes, then no COT OMRA is required. If the answer is no, due either to the number of RTM or the number of days of each therapy discipline was provided, then a COT OMRA would be necessary and the new RUG would be billed from the first day of the relevant COT observation period. Let's now put everything together and consider the example on slide 49. This example illustrates well the concept of successive COT observation periods. In this example, a resident's 30-day assessment is completed with an ARD set for day 30 of the resident's stay. On day 37, which is day 7 of the COT observation period, the provider evaluates the resident's therapy over the past week and determines that no COT OMRA is necessary. The next COT observation period begins on day 38 and ends on day 44. On day 44, the provider determines that a COT OMRA is necessary, perhaps because the resident's RTM was higher than that appropriate to the resident's current RUG category. A COT OMRA is completed, and the provider begins billing the new RUG beginning on day 38 and continuing until the next scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment, which may itself be a subsequent COT OMRA that can be required 7 days later. In preparation for this training call, we received a number of questions related to residents who might index maximize into a non-therapy RUG group, even though they are receiving skilled therapy services. To be clear, when we use the term index maximize, we mean a case where a resident meets the qualifying criteria for both a therapy and non-therapy RUG, and the per diem payment for the non-therapy RUG is higher than the per diem payment for the therapy RUG. For example, if a patient in an urban facility were to simultaneously qualify for both HB2, which is with an FY 2012 per diem payment of approximately $397, and RHB, with a FY 2012 per diem payment of approximately $376, then the facility would bill for HB2. As noted on slide 50, even if a resident index maximizes into a non-therapy RUG, the provider must still perform a change of therapy evaluation, which is to consider the potential necessity of a COT OMRA. So so long as the patient is still receiving skilled therapy services. Put plainly, a COT-OMER should be considered for any patient receiving any amount of skilled therapy services, no matter what drug group that they might classify into for billing purposes. However, as noted on slide 51, a COT-OMER is only required in such cases that changes in the intensity of therapy provided to the resident during a COT observation period are such that it would change the resident's drug category into which they index maximize. Consider the two examples on slide 51. In the first case, a COT-OMER is not required because even though there are changes in the intensity of therapy the resident received that would impact on the resident's therapy drug category, the resident's drug classification in terms of index maximizing remains unchanged. In contrast, in the second example on slide 51, a COT-OMER would be required because the changes in the intensity of therapy provided to the resident during the COT observation period are sufficient to change both the resident's therapy drug category and the resident drug classification used for billing. Ultimately, the requirement to complete a COT-OMER comes down to two questions. First, is the resident receiving skilled therapy services? Second, if so, did the intensity of the resident's therapy change during the COT observation period to such an extent that the therapy received is not reflective of the resident's current therapy drug category and would cause a change in the patient's index maximized drug classification? If the answer to these two questions is yes, then a COT-OMER is required. If not, then no COT-OMER is required. We hope that this discussion clarifies both the intent and operation of the COT-OMER and illustrates the limited circumstances in which this assessment must be completed. In the final few moments of our formal presentation, I want to discuss the transition to FY 2012 billing. As noted in slide 52, providers can expect to receive the following information in preparation for the transition into FY 2012 on October 1st. If the billing period is split between FY 2011 and FY 2012, then both FY 11 RUG 4 and FY 12 RUG 4 groups will be needed to establish payments for the entire billing period. On or around September 18th, the system will be upgraded to calculate both the FY 11 RUG 4 and FY 12 RUG 4 groups for assessments with ARDs between August 22nd and October 31st. The validation reports associated with these assessments will reflect both RUG groups. For FY 2011, the FY 12 RUG group will be shown in error message number 1059. For FY 2012, the FY 11 RUG group will be shown in error message number 1060. That brings us to the end of the formal presentation, though to solidify in your minds the clarifications and policy definitions we've just discussed, we have another pop quiz. Consider question 5 on slide 53. In this situation, Mr. E is currently classified into RUG 4 group RHB. He received therapy Monday through Friday and is not scheduled to receive therapy that weekend. On the following Monday, Mr. E refuses therapy due to a family visit. The question is, should the facility complete an EOT-OMER for Mr. E? The answer is A, yes, since Mr. E did not receive three consecutive calendar days of therapy. An EOT-OMER would be required for this resident. The next question is a bit harder. Question 6. Mr. T receives enough skilled therapy services to qualify for RHC, but due to his medical condition, he index maximizes into group HD2. Question, is the facility required to evaluate whether a COT-OMER is necessary? The answer to this question is also yes, choice B. This might seem confusing with what we just talked about, but remember that a change of therapy evaluation must be done for all patients receiving any amount of skilled therapy services. This does not mean, however, that a COT-OMER would necessarily have to be completed. This is an important distinction that providers should keep in mind so as not to mistakenly skip a required COT-OMER or mistakenly complete a COT-OMER that was unnecessary. Perhaps the hardest question of them all, question 7. Is it true or false that you have had enough pop quiz questions? As we say on slide 57, we both know the answer is false, but we will move on anyway. Before we jump into the Q&A portion of the call, I just want to take a moment to highlight other training resources available to you. First, we are hosting a special SNF LTC open door forum on September 1st. I realize that this is listed as a potential resource here, but we would ask that those of you who are fortunate enough to be able to be on the line today please refrain from calling into the ODF on September 1st. We have a limited number of lines, and we plan on using that ODF as a repeat performance of this training call for those individuals who are unable to participate with us today. We appreciate your understanding on that. There are also other training resources which may be found on the MDS 3.0 website with the address given on slide 58. Also, we encourage interested parties to review additional training resources on the QTSO website, which may be found at www.qtso.com, or the SNF PBS website and training page, which may be found at the address on slide 58. That is all the formal comments, and I will turn the call back over to Sheila Lambert.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks also, Penny Jeanette. All right, we're ready to accept questions. I'm sure you have some. So if you can just give the instructions on how to get into the question queue.
Thank you, Sheila. We have now completed the presentation portion of this call, and we will move on to the question and answer session. Before we begin, I would like to remind everyone that this call is being recorded and transcribed. Before asking your question, please state your name and the name of your organization. In an effort to get to as many of your questions as possible, we ask that you limit your questions to just one. All right, Melissa, you may open the line for questions. Melissa, we're ready to begin taking questions, please.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Rick Strait. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Carol Ramsey for Pinnacle Healthcare in Oregon. I have a question on combining the COT OMRA with the 14-day. If the 5-day you've picked day 6, and so your change of therapy OMRA evaluation would be due on day 13 and you complete it, do you combine it with the 14-day and that backs up any change in RUGs to day 7, or is that an incorrect assumption?
If your 5-day was set for day 6 and the COT observation period would end on day 13 and you had not completed your 14-day, then you would have to combine the COT and the 14-day with an ARD of day 13. And if it's, and that's assuming that the COT OMRA would be necessary. If the COT OMRA were necessary, then that payment would go back to day 7, yes.
Your next question comes from the line of Charlene Keeson. Your line is now open.
Yes, I'm from Manistee County Medical Care in Michigan. My question is, on our MDS, when we have to put in the date of discharge from therapy, we put in the day after the last date of therapy, but our billers are seeing that is incorrect. On the billing side, it's showing the actual last day of therapy. Which one should it be? Because this is going to be real important with the starting and stopping therapy.
But I don't think we have anyone from our billing area here. That's a really good question. We'll get an answer, and we'll get it posted just as soon as possible.
Okay. Can I ask another question then?
Sure.
Okay, on slide 40, the end of therapy resumption can be used when the resident will resume at the same level as prior. How are we going to know this, if they're going to come back into the same level? I mean, are you talking the same RUG level, or what do you mean by that?
This is Penny. Based on your clinical knowledge, if you can tell that the... I think in certain instances, such as the examples that we've given here, where therapy wasn't provided over the weekend and on Monday the patient refused therapy, there was probably no indication in your mind for most of those situations that there was any clinical change in the person's status that would require them to be in a different therapy level than what they were in prior to those 3 days. I think that's probably going to be the case in most situations. You should, an evaluation of the patient, not a formal evaluation, but to determine whether or not there were clinical changes that resulted in that missed therapy. In situations where the clinical change, such as somebody fell and got hurt and wasn't able to participate for 3 days, that may be a situation where you actually need to do a formal evaluation to determine which drug level they go back into.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Linda Jones. Your line is now open.
Hi, we're from Trinity, and my name is Linda Jones. and we would like to know when we will get the assessment indicators for the billing.
I think we have processed them. We'll have to double check actually when they'll be released. Are they in the manual?
They're in the manual, and they should be. They're in the manual. They're part of the specification. We can post them separately on our website in the next few days.
Sheila?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Can you hear me? This is Bob.
Yes.
They're posted in the grouper package.
Oh, okay. They're already posted in the grouper package. If you are not familiar with that, someone at your facility who does some of your IT work or your vendor should be able to open the grouper package and pull those codes for you.
Yeah, there's a separate document that gives the second digit of the AI codes for the EOTR and the COT. And it's also in the computer code if you want to read that.
If you have nothing better to do.
Do you have anything on the website?
It's in the grouper package. RUC 4v1.01.
Right, it's on a website. It's not the part of the website that clinicians usually use.
It's a technical information page off the MDS3 main page.
Oh, we're billers.
So is it on CMS website?
Why don't you send in an email? You can send it to me,
okay.
sheila.lambowitz@cms.hhs.gov, and I will ask one of our staff people to actually pull that and send it to you, and we will put it on the our website for those of you who need it.
Would you spell your last name, Sheila?
L-A, M as in Mary, Z as in boy, O-W, I, T as in Thomas, Z as in zebra.
Thank you, Sheila.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Debbie Malafarina. Your line is now open.
Our question, we're from Fort Collins, Colorado, and our question relates to whether or not if a person misses their 3 days of therapy and they don't participate on Monday, do we give them an end of therapy notice and charge them private pay if they don't qualify in the skilled nursing category?
Right. We did address that in the rule, and I suggest the first thing you do is go back and look at that. John, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I believe I had a little bit more clarification in the MDF manual, but as it talks about in the slides, and I'll need to look back to see exactly which slide talks about it, that if the person admits therapy for 3 days and that they're going to resume, you know, if they missed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and we're going to resume on Monday, then the ABN wouldn't necessarily need to be issued. And so it's important to remember the intent of the ABN, which is to provide the beneficiary with reasonable amount of time to know or to make an informed decision on whether or not they would continue if Medicare were not to cover the stay. So, again, not all cases when a person ends therapy and that is their only skilled service would an ABN need to be issued.
This is Sheila again. We are working with our ABN staff, and we'll try to get you as much clarification as possible. But the crux of the matter is that there is a lot of judgment involved here, and you know each patient is a little bit different. There's nothing that says that because patient A has not had therapy for more than 48 hours that you have to discontinue Medicare coverage. There's a lot more to it. We'll continue to post things to help you understand the process. So just keep watching the website and your other avenues of information. We'll get you more. Next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Lynn Grivois. Your line is now open.
Yes, this is from Maine Veterans Home. I just wanted to double check on when you count a day of therapy,
is it 15 minutes or more, or if they're seen for like 10 minutes, does that count in that 3-day of the therapy that you're discussing?
This is Penny. I'm assuming that you're talking about when determining whether an EOT OMR has to be completed, and a day of therapy is considered 15 minutes, no less than that.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Woodbine Rehab. Your line is now open. Woodbine Rehab, your line is open.
Hello, this is Glenda from Woodbine. Hello.
Hi. Do you have a question?
Yes. My question for John is, when I'm looking at slide 46 and slide 50, I'm very confused because if the patient rocks into a non-rehab rock and you're using the index maximization, what would be the priority for you there? What would be the determination for you to do a COT there? Because when you look at slide 46, it's telling you what the rock categories are, but then when you're reading slide 50, it tells you to look at both the rock category and the maximization. So which one would you do?
You would look to see if the person, the questions that were laid out, that if the therapy category would have changed, if their therapy qualifiers would have changed such that the therapy category would have changed, and it would have made a difference if they had index maximized into a non-therapy rock. So, for example, to use the example that's in the slide, if the person was in LE2 and they had, say, moved from rehab medium to rehab low, if the person still index maximizes the LE2, then the COT OMR would not be required. So you actually it is actually considering both of those things at the same time.
In other words, you're going to be looking at what is maximized, also looking at how many minutes.
You'll be looking at how much time the therapy was provided, as well as the other therapy qualifiers, but also looking at for those few cases that where a patient might index maximize into a non-therapy rock.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Karen Bohannon. Your line is now open.
Yeah, this is Dave Mancelino from Sitter and Barfoot, Richmond, Virginia. We tried to log on the website after the call started, and we were not able to get the slides. It said it was not available. Can you please let us know how we can view the slides so we can print off what you guys were talking about?
Yeah, I'm not sure why there was an issue or if it had anything to do with some of the technical difficulties we've had here, but we'll check that once we get back to our desk to make sure that the links are working.
You might want to try it again, too, that I know for a few minutes when we were having an earthquake, our BlackBerries and phones weren't working, so it
right.
may have affected our computer capabilities, but it looks like everything is back online now.
Just to make sure, between the SNF PPS / O2, is there an underline between that and Spotlight?
Let me give you that address again for the presentation. It's located at the SNF PPS website at www.cms.gov/SNFPPS. And then on the left side of the webpage, you want to click on FY 2012 Rug Floor Training and Education. And then the presentation is in the download section of that page.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrea Wright. Your line is now open.
Hi, my name is Andrea Wright from Bethel Healthcare Center. I have a variation on the first question. If there are less than 7 days between the 5-day scheduled PPS and the 14-day scheduled PPS, do you still then need to do a combined 14-day and COT if the rug level is lower than the 5-day?
The important thing to remember here is if you have not yet completed the scheduled assessment. So, for example, if you had done your 5-day late in the assessment window using the grace days,
right,
and you had completed the scheduled assessment prior to the end of the COT observation period, then you would not need to combine it. You can just do the standalone scheduled assessment, and it would actually reset the COT observation period. If, however, you had not done If you had not done your scheduled assessment at that point, then you would need to combine the two assessments, again, if the COT only was necessary.
So essentially then, if you do your 14-day assessment before the 7-day look-back, the 7-day COT is due, then there's you don't potentially have a change in the reimbursement rate on day 9 if there's a change in RUG level between the 5-day and the 14-day assessment.
Right. It was if you do the 14-day on day 13, then the COT observation period would begin at that point. It would start on day 14 and go until day 20.
Okay. Can I ask just one other real quick question about group therapy? Since 15 minutes is a minimal for a day, if the group of four people is less than 60 minutes, let's say it ends up being a 30-minute group, then the minutes that goes towards the PPS calculation would be less than 15 minutes. Does that still count for the day?
Well, it counts for a day because you're coding it as 30 minutes on the MDS. It's just that the grouper is going to then allocate the money, the minutes, excuse me.
And then on the example that you gave where the person was sick after 10 minutes, I would assume you would still put the 10 minutes in as group time, provided, and then they could have had some other treatment during the day as well.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Patricia Vanderstel. Your line is now open.
Oh, thank you, but my question's already been answered.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Hadley. Your line is open.
Hi there. We're trying to clarify something. A change of therapy assessment is done in the first 6 days of a calendar month. It will affect payment for the prior month, correct?
The COT OMRA does affect payment retroactively, so it's possible that it would go back to a prior month, yes.
I thought so. Is that also the case for September days? If the COT OMRA is done October 1st through 6th, will also affect September days?
And as it turns, because of the way that the COT OMRA transition policy is being operationalized, the earliest that the COT OMRA observation period could begin is October 2nd. Because it would begin for assessments that have an ARD of October 1st. So the earliest that you would need to evaluate for a COT would be October 8th.
Okay.
And the payment could only go back to October 2nd.
Okay, that makes good sense. Okay, thanks very much.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Risty Smith. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hello. My name is Ricky Smith. I'm with LaVie Rehab. My question is regarding the documentation supporting the group therapy mode of delivery. Is justification required on both the therapy plan of care, or 700-701, and also on the resident's care plan? And what would an example of that type of clinical justification be?
Justification would just be that the resident requires group therapy or concurrent therapy to meet this and this goal, and the resident would benefit from the group concurrent or individual therapy because, and so forth, so on, something like that.
So basically it's the standard documentation, this is Sheila again, that you have to specify what your objectives are and how you are organizing your modalities in order to meet those objectives. So, I mean, this is basically standards of clinical practice, and I think in many cases you've done that in your head, and what we're saying is you should just make sure to put it down in paper.
Would it be required on just the therapy plan of care, would also be required on the resident's care plan?
I think that, you should really work with your facility on that, but I would think that on the care plan and your notes, you want to present as good a picture as you can as to why you are performing the different modes of therapy, what you expect to happen, and also how, what kind of outcomes are you getting? Are you seeing improvement, you know, by the patient as a result of the different modalities that you have put in place?
Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Sate. Your line is now open.
Yeah, I have a question. As an RNAC, looking at this 1 week look back period that's rolling, how do we make sure we get other interviews, et cetera, that go with this assessment, or are there going to be more dashes?
It's something that we're looking at now in terms of the interview questions and some of the other items, but for now, you would complete the COT OMRA as if using the EOT item set, but it's something that we should be looking at in the near future, and we'll post clarifications on our website.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Russell MB. Your line is now open. Russell MB, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Amy Bowler. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Howells. I'm from Via Christi in Kansas. I'm a physical therapist, and my question relates to the three-day policy. If somebody misses three consecutive days, but we want to resume on day four, clinically, would we need to have new evaluations for each of our services?
This is Penny. You'd only need a new evaluation if you have not done an end of therapy with resumption. If the circumstances are that you need to do another start of therapy, OMRA, or if you decide to wait until the next scheduled assessment, then you would need to do a new therapy evaluation.
So if we want to pick them up on that fourth day, that if they had missed Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for whatever reason, on Tuesday we would need to fill out a new 700 form, a new eval?
So assuming that there were no changes that would put them in a different, no clinical changes that would put them into a different drug classification, you would not need a new evaluation.
Okay, so they could be seen by a PTA on that day?
Yes.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Lelaine Stone. Your line is now open.
Hi, I think they answered my question a while ago. The COT assessment is going to be like doing an end of therapy. It's not just a little quick assessment we can do and go in and put numbers, and it's going to be like an end of therapy assessment.
This is John. The assessment uses the COT OMRA uses the EOT item set, and if it would be necessary, then you would have to complete that item set. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Andres Pulis. Your line is now open.
This is Andres. The gentleman from Kansas just asked my question, that answered my question, because I was going to ask as well if we need to do discharge paperwork and new evaluations after that end of therapy with resumption period. But I have no other questions.
Okay, great.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Tuchensky. Your line is now open. Hello? Ben Tuchensky, your line is open. Your next question comes from the line of Grace O'Dallow. Your line is now open.
This is Grace. I would like to know the site which was said before where I can print out the this conference for the training.
I'm sorry, this is Sheila. We couldn't really hear you. Can you speak either a little more loudly or closer to the phone?
I'm sorry. I was speaking on the phone and I'm on the speakerphone. I'm sorry. I would like to know the site I can print out this the conference.
I'm sorry. We still can't hear you.
Can you give me again the site I can go and print out this this conference training?
Oh,
in terms of the presentation slides?
Yes.
Oh, okay, sure. Those are located on the SNF PTS website at www.cms.gov/snfpts. At the left side of the webpage,
you'll want to click on the FY 2012 RUG 4 Training and Education, and then scroll down the page to the download section.
We have one more question.
I just wanted clarification again with the change of therapy. Is that, say they miss therapy on Saturday and Sunday. However, one of the therapies is able to get in, and then they say PT is able to get in with the patient, but OT is not. Do we still do the change of therapy for that?
This is John. As long as you're still meeting the qualifications for the RUG category in which the person is classified, then you don't have to do a COT OMRA. Now, if let's say the person was in Rehab Ultra and there's a therapy discipline that needs to meet for 5 days, if OT is the one that meets for 5 days, but they only got in for 4 days, and PT comes in and they do a fourth day, then that wouldn't meet the requirements for the fifth day of that discipline. So it's just the important thing is to look to see if the therapy category qualifiers for whatever category they happen to be in are being met.
Okay. I just thank you for the clarification.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Tanya Wills. Your line is now open.
Yeah, this is Tanya from Garden Isle Rehab on Kauai. And I just want a clarification on that. If they do not receive therapy for 3 days, they miss the weekend, refuse Monday, and you do then you do an end of therapy resumption. But what happens with the payment for those 3 days? If there's no skilled nursing and they're just there for rehab, are we saying the question was, do we bill that to the patient?
Right. And this is John again. I'm actually going to use your question to clarify one other thing. If you do the resumption, okay, that is, if you miss for 3 days and then do the resumption, then you'd be billing at the non-therapy rate for those 3 days that they missed and then resuming at the therapy rate on the day of resumption. In the case when the person is not receiving any other skilled services, then you'd be billing at the default rate for those 3 days.
Okay. Default rate
to Medicare, then.
Okay.
Basically, what's going to happen, this is Sheila again, is that you are going to get a non-therapy RUG group. In all likelihood, it's going to be in the reduced physical function range, and that's what you would bill. And if the person really had no other services, the lowest of the physical function groups is BA1. PA1. But look at what you get back on your, validation report. It'll tell you which of those groups to bill at.
But
it will most likely be reduced physical function.
Okay, but my other question is that let's say we do an end of therapy R, but there's no nursing to skill them. Normally, we would drop to ICF if rehab went out. So is Medicare still going to pay for those 3 days, even though there's nothing skilling?
That's what she's saying.
So they will pay at that default, that low rate then?
Yes, this is Sheila again. Basically, we are working on the assumption that this is not going to be an extremely common situation and that the patient is actually going to be resuming the Medicare regimen, and we did not want to affect patient care by saying you absolutely have to move this patient off Medicare for this short break. What we are saying is that we also can't pay you at the therapy rate for these short breaks in service.
Okay.
And again, that applies in the EOT resumption. If it's a regular EOT and there is no resumption, then the situation that you spoke about would kick in.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Glenda Mack. Your line is now open.
Hi,
Hi, thanks. I'm with Kindred Healthcare, and my question goes back to slides 22 and 24. I think this might be a mistake, but I just want to clear on the supervising any other residents or therapists is referenced on both of these slides. And therapists don't generally supervise therapists, and assistants don't supervise therapists. So my question is should that say students instead of therapists?
I think I see what you're saying. You're saying on slide 22 where it says, while not treating slash supervising any other residents slash therapists, it is a treating residents or supervising students.
Right. I think that it says therapist when actually what I think your intention was that the clinician cannot be supervising any other students because therapists don't supervise therapists.
Yes. Thank you for the clarification. Just to clarify, it is the idea that if the student is working with two different people, then the supervisor cannot be working with anyone.
So really, this is about supervising patient care of any students that therapist might be actually supervising as well, is what you're trying to get to the point of. So
yes.
If another student was doing patient care, then that would mess up the whole situation.
Right.
That particular therapist supervision standard. So I just wanted to be clear because it was creating confusion for our team.
Yeah,
we're trying to address the issue, too, of you can't have a therapist that is supervising but not treating, and they're supervising two students.
Exactly.
That situation can't occur.
Yeah, so I think instead of the word therapist in both these slides, it should have said student.
Okay,
we'll make that correction.
Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Eileen Dahl. Your line is now open.
Hi, I'm here in Baltimore, still shaking from the earthquake. But I do have...
As always.
Yeah, this is something. At any rate, the question is about on slide 5 and slide 6. The word used is be completed by. And I'm wondering if on both of those slides you mean set by, about the ARD. In other words, on slide 5, it says that the assessment must be completed by September 30th. And on the other slide, it talks about the assessment being completed when combining. Are you talking about the ARD set or the assessment being completed?
No, you're correct. We do mean the ARD set. You're right. Thank
right,
you
for because on especially
out.
On slide 6, when you're talking about combining assessments, I want to make sure that you are not saying that we don't still have the window to set the reference date. In other words, previously, we could set the reference date any time within the allowed window, and we would not have to combine. Is that still going to hold that we can set the reference date any time within that window?
Just to clarify the combined assessment policy. This is John, by the way. Just to clarify the combined assessment policy, when you have an unscheduled assessment that is due prior to a scheduled assessment being completed in the same window, okay, so the example that we've been using is if you have, say, a COT that is due on day 14. Okay, the COT observation period ends day 14. If the 14-day assessment has not been completed by that point, then the ARD for both the COT OMRA and the scheduled assessment must be set to day 14.
Okay.
If, however,
assessment
if
completed
the,
or ARD set?
The ARD must be set for day 14 on the combined assessment, and the AI code should be clear as it being a combined COT and 14-day assessment. If, however, the scheduled assessment was completed prior to the unscheduled assessment, then that would not need to be the case. You would not need to combine them.
Well, I'm still a little bit confused. You're saying completed or the ARD set about combining? Because
the ARD must be set. If the ARD for the 14-day was set prior to when the ARD would need to be set for the unscheduled. So if you had the ARD for the 14-day assessment set on day 13 and the COT OMRA would have been set on day 14, then you don't need to combine them. Okay. In fact, that actually resets the COT ARD.
That's what I wanted to clarify. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Well, looks like we have time for one final question.
Your last question comes from the line of Rita Underwood. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, Sheila, and everybody else, and thanks for your wonderful insight today. My question comes with
sort of dovetails off of the last one, actually. When you have the assessment schedules, which, by the way, are in the proposed rule, not part of the final rule, so you have to be able to download the proposed rule to get the assessment schedule. And I've searched and searched on the CMS website for the proposed rule and have been unlucky and not able to find it. So I'd like an address for the proposed rule so I can download it. And then the second item that I'd like to offer some insight on with your opinion, Sheila, is the combining of an OMRA admission assessment with a TPS 14-day assessment, given the new revised schedule that we have with the TPS and the type of different assessments we are looking at now, is, and I've not been able to find it in the regulatory state ops manual, which I have the pleasure of reading more frequently than I'd like, as well as the proposed rule of not being required to combine the 14-day TPS and be able to break that apart from the admission OMRA assessment if one chooses, if that's an okay thing to do. And then the last item would be the documentation we can expect for regulators to look at as it relates to this informal evaluation as documentation proof not only that it was done in some suggested format that, you know, various companies and facilities are going to be using, and what your opinion is as far as guidance.
Right. I'm going to stop you here because you're raising some really good points, and we're not going to have enough time to answer them now. So do you have my email address?
I sure do.
Okay, send me those. We will respond to you and give you the websites that we need. You need to find the rule, and we'll also make sure that we get answers to your other questions and make those available to everyone.
I would like to point out that the new MDS schedule is in these presentation slides, and that may be an easier avenue for you to find that.
So, but send me the email. I think your questions now are how do we do the, how do you reconcile the OMRA and the Medicare schedule? That really hasn't changed much, but we'll get that to you as quickly as we can. I'm sorry, we do have to wrap up, and I wanted to take one last minute to tell you how much I have enjoyed working with all of you for all these years on training programs, on the Open Door Forum. For many of you, this may be the last time I speak to you. I am in the process of retiring from CMS, but I wanted to thank you for all of the many years of, really collegial working where we have been trying to make these systems work, trying to provide good care to residents together. So thank you very much. And, at least for some of you, goodbye.
Thank you, Sheila. We would like to thank everyone for joining us and for your participation in the question and answer portion of the call. An audio recording and written transcript will be posted to the FY 2012 RUG 4 Training and Education page of the Smith TPS website at www.cms.gov/snfpps. I would like to thank our subject matter experts for their participation. Have a great day, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.